going to begin tonight with our lesson from opening up Proverbs. And tonight we're looking at lesson number 8, which has to do with the theme of work. Wisdom at work is the title of the lesson. And as I mentioned last week, once you hit Proverbs chapter 10, most of the rest of the book of Proverbs is a collection of these loose individual sayings that you don't find a lot of lengthy paragraphs that all fit together. They're, you know, just a proverb about this topic followed by a proverb about a different topic, and they're just kind of topically scattered really throughout the rest of the book. And so what we're doing in this study is pretty much the second half of the study. We're looking at different themes that are prominent themes in that second half of Proverbs. And one of them is the way that we exercise our faith and the way that we put God's wisdom into practice in our vocations, in the workplace, in our jobs. And it's a very important theme in Proverbs. And really, if you think about it, it's a way that we spend a good portion of our lives, isn't it? We spend a good portion of our lives doing the vocation, the thing that we've been called to, whether that is working at a particular job for an employer, or whether that is running your own business, or whether that is managing and caring for your home as a mother, as a homemaker. We have all been called to various callings, and that's how we spend a good portion of our lives. And so it's important that as we spend all of that time, that we also think about how to do it for the glory of God and think about how to apply his wisdom in that part of our lives. And so he begins with a theology of work. And kind of what he's doing here is he's just kind of tracing very quickly the theme, the idea of work all the way throughout the scriptures. And we learn at the very beginning that God is a working God, isn't he? God works. The Bible begins with God working, doesn't it? God is making things. He's creating. God is creating the world, and he takes 6 days to do it. And it's interesting that from the very beginning, God establishes a pattern of work and rest in his own example. So God creates everything that is in 6 days, and then he sets apart the seventh day as a day of rest. God set that pattern himself, and so God is a working God. In the New Testament, we read where Jesus says, my Father is still working. He is always working. Of course, that came up on a Sabbath controversy, and Jesus was showing the fact that when it comes to doing good, there's really no time where we can make excuses for not doing good for other people and showing love. And so God's working. And then we read also in the opening chapters of Scripture that God made us in his image, and he designed us to work, didn't he? So he designed us to work. And so we see, for example, Adam naming the animals, exercising his dominion over the creation, just like God intended. We see Adam being given the responsibility for caring for the garden and tending the garden as a vineyard worker, as a farmer, if you will. And so he is in God's image, working and using his skills, using his intelligence, using his energy and labors for God's glory. That was how it was designed. But then what happened in Genesis 3? Fall, right? Adam and Eve disobeyed God. They fell into disobedience. And what was one of the major consequences of that disobedience? It had to do with work, didn't it? One of the main curses that God placed on this world as a result of our sin is that work now would be hard. It would be toilsome. By the sweat of your brow, you will work. It will be thorns and thistles. It's going to be hard. So, and I think that's an important thing for us to stop and think about, and that is that work in and of itself is not bad. Now, for most of us, we think, oh man, I got to go to work. Work's hard. You know, you got to sweat when you work. You got to put effort in when you work. But really, from the beginning, work was something that God designed even for man in his holiness to do. And I'm convinced that in eternity, even in a new heavens and a new earth, there will be things that we will do to exercise responsibility, to exercise the gifts that God has given to us. I think in a similar way to Eden, God is going to give us various areas of responsibility to be what he designed for us to be in the beginning, and that is to be perfect, holy image bearers, exercising dominion for his glory, but this time without sin. And so I think there's going to be work in a perfect heaven and earth, but it's not going to be toilsome. It's not going to be miserable. It's not going to be by the sweat of our brow having to deal with all the frustrations of this world. So work became hard at the fall. Work became toilsome and difficult. And we also see that the fall hurt us, didn't it? It changed us, and it corrupted our natures. And so now we even look at work differently than before. Not only was the ground affected, thorns and thistles, and the world itself is going to make work difficult, but we are in our own hearts changed. And we developed selfishness, selfish attitudes. And even our workplaces, a lot of times, we're just looking out for ourselves. In the business, we're looking out for ourselves. And so some people don't want to work and they resist work through laziness. Other people in their work, they use their work to oppress others and to take advantage of others. So sin has tainted our work in this world. But then we learn that Christ has come, and Christ is redeeming us as sinners, and he's also redeeming this world. Romans 8 talks about the fact that Jesus is redeeming this world, and one day it will be a new heavens and a new earth. And so Christ is coming to reverse the effects of the fall. And a part of that is now that we can view, in Christ, we can view work as something to be done for the glory of God. So work has significance, it has meaning in Christ because of the fact that the things that we do have eternal significance. Remember what Paul says at the very end of 1 Corinthians 15? 1 Corinthians 15 is a chapter on the resurrection, showing the resurrection to be true and that essential to our faith. And at the very end, he says, be encouraged, take heart, stand firm. Why? Because your labor is not in vain. Your work is not in vain. And I think by that he means probably primarily your work in ministry, your work for the gospel, your work for Christ. But I think it could encompass even what we would consider ordinary everyday work that's done for the glory of God. And I want us to think about the fact that it's not just what we might call holy professions that can be done to the glory of God, but every honorable profession can be done to the glory of God. Now, obviously, there are some that are out of bounds, right? We would say the profession of a prostitute or a call girl, that's out of bounds. Okay, you cannot do that honorably. But any honorable profession can be done for the glory of God, even if you're getting paid for it. So a doctor, even though he's getting paid, and that's his job, that's his profession, he's doing good for other people, isn't he, in that profession. And he can glorify God and do that work with a God-focused reference point in that work. And he can bless others for God's glory. A person who grows crops in the field, they're benefiting people, benefiting a lot of people by providing food for them. A person that works on repaving a road, as we are dealing with right now in downtown Winfield, that's helpful to us, isn't it? When it's done, it's better. And those people are doing a service for other people, even though that's their job and they're getting paid for it, it still benefits others. If you're a Christian, you can do any of those jobs to the glory of God. And in applying wise principles to that job. And so what he's going to do is kind of walk through some of the Proverbs that teach us how to be wise workers for the glory of God. And the first major idea is to not be a sluggard. Don't be a sluggard. If you're going to act in wisdom toward your profession, toward your calling, then we can't be a sluggard. And Proverbs has a lot to say about that, doesn't it? Proverbs has a lot to say about how we use our time and how we spend our energy and our effort. Don't be a sluggard. What are some of the characteristics of a sluggard? There are several. Proverbs 6 mentions many of them. We're probably all familiar with that famous portion in Proverbs 6 where he says, go to the ant, you sluggard. Look at the ant. Look at the industry, the hard work of the ant who prepares food in summer for the coming winter. And so he uses that from that lesson from nature as an example to teach his son how to work hard. So one of the things that characterizes a sluggard is laziness. That's obvious, right? It's kind of what we identify a sluggard with is laziness. What is laziness? How would you define, you know, without pulling out a Webster's dictionary, how would you define laziness? What would some of the words be that you would use to describe that? Don't work, right? Maybe I could add to that, not working when he should be working, right? Because a little bit later on, we're going to talk about there are times when we need to rest. There are times when it's good to sleep. There are times when it's good to take a day off. God set apart a day of rest. But when it's time to work, it's time to work, right? It's time to get busy. And so someone who should be doing something else, should be doing something profitable, should be doing something diligent, but they're not. They're wasting time, right? And laziness has all kinds of forms, doesn't it? One obvious one is probably sleep. You know, you can sleep away while you should be working. You can just twiddle around and do things that you can even give the impression of working, but you're not really working. You can just, what's that? Yeah, time mismanagement, not being productive with the time that you have. I read something recently, and I can't remember the exact statistic, but it's in the billions and billions of dollars that time mismanagement, wasted time, costs businesses in America every year. Billions and billions of dollars. Games and internet and surfing the news and just, you know, busy work that's not focused on your main objective, all kinds of things. And so there are lots of ways. Lazy people can be very ingenious, right? Proverbs even talks about that the lazy person can come up with all kinds of reasons why this is not a good time to work. Very ingenious, very smart in coming up with ways not to work. But one of the characteristics is just laziness, not working. Another characteristic of the sluggard, and this is probably related, is just delighting in sleep and recreation. Sleeping too much. You can probably read through Proverbs and see many, many places where Proverbs talks about the lazy person who sleeps too much. But it's not just the one who sleeps too much, but there are other forms of laziness too, such as recreation or entertainment, leisure. And that's not to say that those things are bad in and of themselves. Is it wrong to take some time off to read a book or to play a game or to watch a show or a movie? No, not in and of itself, but if it's time to work and you're expected to be doing something productive, then that would be wrong, wouldn't it? And obviously you can overindulge in any of those things, and it becomes a problem. But a sluggard gives himself to sleep and to recreation. In Proverbs 6, verse 7, we see that a sluggard lacks initiative, just doesn't want to get up and get going, doesn't want to apply himself to the job at hand. We read in Proverbs 22, 13, he says, "There's a lion outside. I will be killed in the streets." That's one of the examples of the excuses that a sluggard can give. It's too dangerous out there. It's too hard, too difficult. Doesn't take the initiative to get things going. The sluggard procrastinates. Now, I realize that a lot of this is stepping on some toes tonight, but that's the good thing about walking through a book and a lesson is I didn't write this lesson. I'm just summarizing it for you. But it's stepping on my toes too, because I have a tendency to procrastinate. I have a tendency to let things slide to the next day that could be done today. And I think we all face that from time to time. But it's a challenge, isn't it? That we need to not be people who waste time, people who presume that tomorrow will be there. Part of procrastination is presuming. We think we know what tomorrow holds, but we don't always know that. The sluggard is self-deceived. The sluggard is self-deceived. And so in Proverbs, we see that sometimes a sluggard doesn't even know how lazy he's being. He thinks that he's doing okay, and he thinks that even though he's not applying his greatest effort, that there's still going to be a harvest on harvest day. But he's self-deceived in that, isn't he? A sluggard is looking for easy money. A sluggard is looking for easy money. How many smart, intelligent, industrious, diligent people do you know who play the lottery? There might be some who would occasionally buy a lottery ticket for fun, but that's generally not the category of people that you see buying the bulk of lottery tickets, is it? A lot of times the bulk of people who you see buying lottery tickets are the ones who are looking for a quick handout, right? They want a quick inflow of money, easy. It's one of the characteristics of laziness. The sluggard is a destructive force. And so this looks at not only just the character of the sluggard himself, but also now the influence that the sluggard can have on a group, on a team, on a family, on a church, on a business. A sluggard can be a destructive force, not only to himself, but to those around him. And so those are some of the characteristics of a sluggard. And the wise teacher in Proverbs is teaching his mentee, his disciple, his son, don't be a sluggard, because it will bring severe consequences in your life. And that's really the next point, is that being a sluggard has incredibly profound consequences. Profound consequences. He says in Proverbs 15:19, the way of the lazy is a hedge of thorns. In Proverbs 6:11, your poverty will come in like a vagabond and your need like an armed man. Proverbs 20, verse 13, do not love sleep or you will become poor. There are consequences to being a sluggard. And some of those consequences are not only in this world, but someone who is characteristically described as a lazy person, as an idler. The New Testament even has some very serious things to say about someone like that in terms of their eternal destiny. And so this is not just, hey, you might miss out on a paycheck. This is serious business, because laziness is a mark of laziness is the opposite of holiness. Industry, diligence, self-control, that is a mark of holiness. That's a mark of God's grace in someone's life. So consequences, severe consequences. And then he also mentions in the chapter that it's really not in our best interests, nor in the best interest of the sluggard, to provide aid to them when they're in need. Many, many places throughout the book of Proverbs, it warns against helping out the sluggard, because you're really not helping them in the end. You're helping them for the moment, but you're not helping them in the long term. You're taking away from yourself and you're giving it to someone who is not responsible enough to know how to use it and is not going to take it to better their lives or to improve their character. Paul even says this in the New Testament when talking about the church and talking about taking care of one another's needs and distributing food to those who are in need. And in 2 Thessalonians 3, he says, if someone doesn't work, they shouldn't eat. So that's even a New Testament principle. And so I'm not saying that we shouldn't help people, but we should be more reserved, I think, about helping people that we know are not applying themselves and seeking to be diligent in the use of their time and resources. So one word of advice is don't be a sluggard. The opposite advice of that then is to be diligent. And so there's negative teaching in terms of don't be this in Proverbs, but then there's positive teaching. This is how you should act in work, and that is to be diligent. And then he gives several characteristics of a wise worker. Also, many of these coming from Proverbs chapter 6. He works hard. He works hard. He's diligent. He puts effort into his work. He takes initiative and works well without supervision. You can give that person a task knowing that it will be done. You can assign them something knowing that they will get it started and they will see it through to completion. A diligent worker also prepares for the future, using the example of the ant. The ant, who is really all of this is by instinct, but by instinct they prepare in advance for the winter that's coming. They take care to ensure what's coming down the road. A diligent worker patiently pursues success, doesn't look for a get-rich-quick scheme, but takes the long view of diligence and hard work. He's a good steward of his resources, looks at what he's been given as a gift from God, and manages them, stewards them well, doesn't take them for granted. He performs his duties with excellence and with artistry even. In other words, he takes care in what he does. He takes pride in his work. It's not just, I'll meet the minimum requirement and put a check mark, it's done. But doing it with care and with excellence. And as if, even if he's not the owner of the company, doing it as if he was, with the care, with that amount of care. And so those are some of the characteristics of a diligent worker. And just as a lazy person faces consequences, the diligent person in Proverbs is rewarded. The diligent person is rewarded. Proverbs says that there will be financial success. In general, that's a truth of life, isn't it? That if you work hard, then there will be profit on the other side of that. Now, again, this is just a reminder that Proverbs is not a carte blanche guarantee of everything, in every circumstance, in every scenario. We all know people that have worked very hard, but an unexpected tragedy has happened to them. So Proverbs is communicating general truths. If you work hard, if you're diligent, if you make wise decisions, then there will be a reward for that. You'll enjoy success and fulfillment in vocation. Who is the person who is promoted? It's the person who works hard. It's the person who is on time and is faithful. And it's also the person that tends to take joy in what they do. And the person who is diligent and puts effort into it and sees it as a vocation, as a calling from God, that person also finds fulfillment in it and doesn't look at it as much of as a drudgery. But this is something that I can use my time in to glorify God. He will enjoy the fruit of his labor. That he sees the finished results. He sees the accomplishments. He sees the bills are paid. He sees that his family has food on the table. Ecclesiastes 5:12 says, "The sleep of the working man is pleasant." So he can lay down at the end of the day and go to sleep because he knows he's given it his all that day. And he enjoys the fruit of that. And then he'll be rewarded in even the final judgment. Wise workers, he says in the lesson, wise workers don't just stand before kings. They will also stand before the King of Kings, and he will reward those who honor him with their work. So those who are diligent will be rewarded even in the end as they stand before Christ. One of the things he says in the lesson about Proverbs is that Proverbs does not promote the idea of communism. In other words, communism is essentially like a forced, mandated equality, taking from one and giving to the other. Proverbs does not communicate that idea of a system, of a society. Now, Proverbs does lift up generosity, and it does lift up concern for one another, especially those who are in difficult situations. But Proverbs does not advocate rewarding those who don't work. So it lifts up the diligent and that they will be rewarded for their diligence. And those who are lazy, they will suffer the consequences because of their laziness. And so Proverbs doesn't have in mind more of a communistic idea. It has puts more personal responsibility on each one to use their time and gifts and efforts to take care of their own needs and the needs of their family. Then there are some warnings to the diligent. One warning to the diligent is work is only good when it is exercised under God's lordship. Work is only good when it is exercised under God's lordship. Proverbs 16:3 says, "Commit your works to the Lord, and your plans will be established." And the idea with this is that there are two ways to approach a vocation. At least two ways to approach a vocation. One is you can approach a vocation for the glory of God. And that everything that you do in that job, whether it be your faithfulness to show up on time and daily, whether it is your diligence and working hard, whether it is taking initiative and following through on instructions, however you do that job, all of that can be God-focused, or potentially it can be self-focused, right? So a person could do all of those same things, show up every day, follow instructions, take initiative and hard work, but he could be viewing it as totally for himself. As, I want to get rich, I want to build up a big bank account, I want a big house, I want to get set up for retirement, and I want my family to have nice material things. And that would be all worldly focused, wouldn't it? So basically what he's saying here is you can be diligent, but for the wrong reasons. For a worldly reason, a self-focused reason. But we need to be called to be diligent for the lordship of God, for his glory. And also one other warning here is that we need to not make work an idol. Not make work an idol. And that can happen. There are some people who are workaholics and they work a lot. And there are various reasons why they do that. Some people might be workaholics to avoid their home life. Some people might be workaholics because maybe just even by their personality, they don't have a wide social life. So they invest everything in their work. Some people might be workaholics for materialistic reasons. They want the goods and benefits that come from the money from extra work. Some people want the quick rise in the company and the promotions and the fame and the recognition that comes with that. So there are various reasons why people might give too much to their work. And if you work too hard and you invest everything every single day and never take a rest, you're going to burn yourself out, for one thing, physically, mentally, spiritually. You're going to burn yourself out. And you're actually being disobedient to the Lord who has given us a pattern of resting. When we rest, it recognizes the fact that we are not infinite. We're not all powerful. We have weaknesses. We have times when we need to set time aside to rest and to trust in the Lord. If you remember back when God gave Israel the manna, remember when they were in the wilderness and God gave them manna? One of the things that I think it taught them on the Sabbath day was that they had to trust God. Because God told them, okay, there's going to be manna 6 days, right? 6 days, go out there, gather your manna just for the day. Don't try to store up for the whole week. It'll go bad. And it did. Some people try to do it. One day at a time, give us this day our daily bread, like Jesus teaches us to pray. So one day at a time. But on the seventh day, you're not going to go out and gather, because on the sixth day, I'm going to give you double. And you're going to gather double on the sixth day so that you can be ready for the seventh day. And I'm going to cause it so that normally every other day, if you gathered extra, it would spoil. But on this day, it's not going to spoil to the next day, because I'm going to provide for you. So on this day, don't go out and work, but trust me that I have provided for you what you need for this day of rest. Some people went out on the seventh day, and they found nothing. There wasn't anything there. And God was angry with them because they went out on the seventh day and didn't listen to him. They didn't trust him. So a part of rest is depending on God and trusting him. There are times when we need to rest. And remember that we can't do it all. We're not all sufficient. We're not all powerful, but our God is. And we need to rest in him. And so work can become an idol if we look at it as, I have to take care of everything. I'm the God of my life. Or if we look at it as materialistically, I've got to provide all these good things for me or for my family. Or I want the fame and the promotion from work. We can make work an idol. And it shows itself in different ways. And then there are some exhortations here for various classes of people. For young people, the advice of Proverbs is very early on, establish good patterns, good habits of diligence. Learn how to work from an early age. More and more employers are looking for not necessarily graduates who have really high prestigious college degrees or really high GPAs. They're looking for people that have had to work their way through college. They're looking for people that have had to employ some effort, some diligence to get where they are. Not necessarily the person who was handed everything and he graduated from Harvard. They're looking more for someone who has shown that they know what it is to work and to put the effort in. And so as young people, we need to establish those early on, because for all of us who are adults in here, the farther you go in life, does it not get harder and harder to change? It's true, isn't it? The farther you go in life, the older you get, we get more set in our ways. It's harder and harder to change. Establish good patterns early in your life is what he's telling these young people. Some words of wisdom in Proverbs for homemakers, and that is that their calling is also noble. It's a noble calling. And they should remain faithful in that calling because it is incredibly important and it honors God. Older people should continue working. You know, in America, we've come up with this idea that we can have and you see commercials about it all the time. What's the ideal retirement? Well, if you listen to the Fidelity commercials or the Edward Jones commercials, retirement is about having a yacht that you can sail around the world on, or take all these vacations, or, you know, go golfing every day. And it's almost as if the whole American way is work, 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 so that you can enjoy the rest of your life off and have fun and travel and everything. And it's really not a biblical picture of work. We've also seen people who have retired and they've quickly faded away because they were no longer active. They were no longer busy. And they just kind of faded away, wasted away. And that can happen too. I think work, yes, it's hard, but it can also be a gift in the sense of it keeps us busy. It keeps us active. It keeps our mind working. And so even if you're not working for an employer, you know, past 62 or 65 or whenever it is, we can still be industrious, can't we? We can still be out working and doing things. And if we are enjoying retirement, then let's not be selfish about it. And maybe use our retirement not just to sit around and do nothing, but maybe to have more time free to help others. The SBC has a whole program set up. The International Mission Board has a whole program set up for people who have worked a vocation and now have reached the age of retirement, and they can go to the mission field. And they can use whatever their skill is, whatever their trade is, and they can use it on the mission field. And they're recruiting missionaries to do that. That's one way to use your retirement for the glory of God. So older people can even continue working, even if you're not still under an employer, per se. And also, don't be a spiritual sluggard. Don't be a spiritual sluggard. We can fall into that trap of just being lazy with our spiritual disciplines, being lazy in our prayer life, being lazy in reading the Word. We can become spiritually lazy. We can become lazy in our vigilance against temptation, in the spiritual battle that we face. And Proverbs calls us to not do that. So here's just a few things as we close in conclusion. One is God has given you work to do for his glory. And the beauty of this is that every single one of us has different abilities, right? We all have different abilities. We all have different gifts. And God has designed it that way. Not only for our community, for the world, we have different gifts and vocations, but even for the church, we have different gifts and vocations that God has called us to. Some people are good at one thing and other people are not good at that. But that's okay because we're a family, we're a body of Christ, and we can use all of the gifts that we've been given, the diversity of gifts, for the glory of God. And also, we need to remember that God has given us rest. God has given us rest, and he desires for us to enjoy that rest, to enjoy it, because it's a gift from God. And one day, we will enjoy a lifting of the curse, a lifting of the fall in the new heavens and the new earth. And we look forward to that future heavenly rest, if you will. And what I wanted to do is just here at the end, I wanted to give, I may not do this every week, but several books came to my mind from this lesson that I've benefited from. And I just wanted to share those with you. They're books that kind of expand more on this idea of how can we glorify God in our work or in our calling. And if you're interested in any of these, I'm just going to share them with you. One is called Work Matters by Tom Nelson, How Our Work Matters in Our Spiritual Lives and Glorifying God. Another one is Every Good Endeavor by Tim Keller. The Gospel at Work by two authors, Traeger and Gilbert, The Gospel at Work. And then another one is Business for the Glory of God. And that might apply more to those who maybe they have a business or they're starting a business. But there are some principles in there just for workers as well. But I just thought I'd share those with you if you want to pursue some of these themes further.